The Winter Olympics in Sochi are just around the corner. The opening ceremony isn't until Friday, but some qualifying events are taking place tomorrow.
And while the Olympics are often a time of excitement and inspiration, these games have been overshadowed in part by concerns over security and terrorism, to the point where those concerns have caused one Wisconsin Olympian to tell his family to stay home. What's behind these threats, and how is Russian President Putin planning on keeping his country and the world's athletes safe for the next 2 weeks?
Joining us now to make sense of the security threat is Lisa Baglione, professor and chair of political science at St. Joseph's University. Lisa, welcome back to the show.
Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
Well, let's start by having you set the stage. And we're hearing a lot about potential terror threats and the twin bombings in the town of Volgograd last month put the world on watch, effectively. Who's behind this?
Well, we think it's the Caucasus Emirate, and they are a group that emerged out of the unrest in Chechnya and the rest of the North Caucasus, and that's rooted in two earlier wars, one that started in end of 1994 and a second that resumed in 1999. And what we saw is in 2007, a group, a more radical group, emerged to announce this being the Caucasus Emirate, and to take action in a jihadist or Islamist fashion to fight Russians, especially. But then they have expanded their concerns to Western interests too.
Now, there have been security experts quoted in the papers recently saying that the threats that we know about so far, that they're credible. What do we know so far about the threats?
Well, back in July, the leader of the Caucasus Emirate, Doku Umarov, said that that group would take actions to disrupt the Olympics, and then we have seen their activity in October and in December aimed at Volgograd, and so the fear is that they will attack not only Sochi or potentially different parts of Russia, and in that sense make people nervous and also cause death and destruction. They have been very successful in doing that, as we saw just in December, but for the last 6 years they've wreaked a lot of havoc on Russians.
Now, terror threats at the Olympics, unfortunately, they're not a new thing anymore. Mm-hmm. Do we have reason to take the threats at Sochi more seriously than other threats in the past?
Well, I think we have to take these threats very seriously because this group has announced an intention and has succeeded in the past. We can't just look at Sochi, or the Russians can't just look at Sochi, that they would consider be acting in other parts of Russia and potentially in other parts of the world, although their reach is as far as we know, less capable. But as you may know in some of the things that you have read, some people believe that the Boston bombers, Marathon bombers, were, if not affiliated, trying to impress or had been inspired by this group to take action and to show their commitment and seriousness. So these threats are serious, and the Russian government takes them seriously, and other governments of the world do. And it is a big concern.
We're hearing a lot about a so-called ring of steel that will protect Sochi, including some pretty extraordinary measures. Can you describe some of the precautions in place to keep Sochi safe?
Well, certainly. The Russian government invested, I think it's about $2 billion to close off the city and brought in about 100,000 people, which is four times the amount of officers who were at the London Olympics in 2012 to maintain security. The area was cordoned off a few months ago, and also we have the governor of that area recommissioning the Cossacks, which is an unofficial group of people on horseback who will use actions to look for potential terrorists. But the issue is not just quantity, but it's going to be the quality of what they can deliver. And here, there are some concerns, because if we look at, for instance, just how the Russians were able to fight the war in Georgia, which is related in terms of Russian activity, they have problems with command, control, communications, and intelligence and surveillance. So what we worry about now is whether there's going to be the kind of information sharing, and then ability to act. Another thing about these forces is that they're split with the FSB, that's the Federal Security Service, as those in charge, but the folks who are mostly implementing are from a different service, the Interior Ministry and the police. And we've had long-standing inter-service rivalries, and so that could be an issue, too. So Russia's preparations in numbers of people are, one could say, unprecedented. The issue is whether the delivery will be there. And what's so hard is in a group like this, the Caucasus Emirate, it's relatively small. The estimates are about 400 to 1,500 active fighters, but they tend to be very self-contained, linked by family or clan relationships. And so some folks I've been reading say that the best way to break up or to foil a plot is to have inside information. And these groups are very hard to get inside, number one. And number two, the Russian forces haven't been that successful in infiltrating. So the concern is, for terrorism to succeed, it takes one motivated person, two motivated people to make it through that ring of steel. And particularly with the quality of Russian forces, with the reputation of some of those troops, it is a bit of a worry.
The United States, though, has not been leaving security entirely up to the Russians. We have a private security firm in place called Tiger Swan. Mm-hmm. I understand that there is an aircraft carrier standing by in the Black Sea. Can you talk a little bit about those efforts?
Well, I'm not quite sure what the U.S. aircraft carrier is going to be able to accomplish. Perhaps if there is a disaster, yes, it can airlift people out. But it seems it's a bit, I wonder if that's just playing to our domestic politics. And so that, you know, it is a measure of prevention, or not prevention, of for disaster planning. I don't know what it can do to actually prevent. You need people on the ground. With respect to the security forces, they can keep individual athletes or groups of athletes safe. But the question is, how good are their language skills? How well are they integrated into the Russian efforts, so that they would be able to share information or coordinate with the Russians? And I'm just not sure that there's been the planning, the training, and other activities to make it a success.
Now, is Russia in a tough place right now, in that it has to balance its need to stay secure and the need to project an image of a non-military state to the rest of the world?
Sure, and that's part of one of the whole reason for having and hosting this Olympics. For Putin, these Sochi Olympics are supposed to be, are intended to be, this crowning achievement, an achievement to show that Russia is back. Russia, there, and it's back in two ways. You have to think of, from the Russian perspective, the 1990s are this disaster decade, a decade of losing their empire, losing their imperial glory, and economic depression, and therefore the lack of losing respect both at home and abroad. And the 2000s, and Putin's narrative about the 2000s, is what he has done is remake Russian power, remake Russian prestige, and the Russian economy. So he has restored respect. And so the Olympics were supposed to focus on all of these wonderful positives and to show off this beautiful city that was going to be remade and made so with these amazing interconnections between the temperate climate and the mountains for the snow. But now, as I think we all know, all the reports have come out, there are just so many questions about how well Putin is going to be able to deliver on what he had hoped for.
Well, and let's talk more about the Russian president. How much is riding on these games for Vladimir Putin?
Well, for Putin, end of 2011 and 2012 were very difficult years for him. When he and Medvedev announced that they were going to switch posts again, and then the legislative elections went forward in December, there were protests. People protested the stealing of the elections, the corruption in the elections, and then people continued to protest into the presidential campaign, which was held in March. This was a shock to him. And it made his prestige decrease nationally and internationally. Thereafter, he's been working very hard to rebuild, and he's had some great successes. In 2013 was a year of big success, and again, he can build this narrative, and he was hoping to bring that into the Sochi Olympics. So he's the great. He stands up for freedom and rights with giving Edward Snowden asylum. He's the mediator that keeps the U.S. and the West from attacking Syria, and he helps to put the chemical weapons Syria to give up its chemical weapons. And then at the end of the year, he influences the Ukraine to not move forward with its arrangement with the EU and to strengthen its relationship with Russia. So and I forgot, of course, his Man of the Year designation by the Times International.
It's a complex picture.
So yes. So the Sochi Olympics were supposed to be his crowning achievement, put those worries behind him, and to move him forward back onto, and Russia too, back onto the world stage.
And Lisa, do you think the Olympic Committee knew what they were in for in terms of the security challenge when they picked Sochi?
Well, I read the New York Times this morning too. They should have, but it sounds as if they were charmed by Mr. Putin. And it's, you know, I'm not sure how well the Olympic Committee follows developments in the North Caucasus or did back then. And again, the narrative that Putin was using over the mid-2000s and on was that the war in Chechnya was basically over. The problem of terrorism was, for the most part, contained. He had turned the responsibility for the war primarily over to local groups in Chechnya. He called it the Chechenization of the war. So this was before the Olympic Committee would have made its decision. I think that the Olympic Committee wasn't following these politics as well as it could have.
Well, we'll be watching along with the world. Lisa, thank you so much for helping us get a handle on this today.
It's my pleasure. Thank you.
We've been talking about what's behind the terror threat in Sochi with Lisa Baglione, professor and chair of political science at St. Joseph's University.
Now we want to hear your thoughts on the Olympics. There's been a lot of negative news surrounding the Sochi Olympics, as we just heard, security issues and threats of terror. Also concerns about corruption, shortfalls in infrastructure, international protests over human rights issues and an anti-gay law in Russia. Just a few of the stories casting a shadow. All that in the pot. Are you going to watch the Olympics? Is that going to steer you away? Or will you set the politics aside and watch the game? If so, what are you looking forward to? Give a call at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also email talk@wpr.org.
We're taking your calls right now at 1-800-642-1234. That's 1-800-642-1234. Are you planning on tuning into the Olympics, or has the negative news, a terror threat surrounding the games, has it turned you off from watching? Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234, and you can also post on the Central Time Facebook page.
We'll go right to the phones now. We've got Renee with us in East Troy. Renee, hi.
Hi. I was on Twitter last night or this morning, and there are some very humorous photos. The reporters that are arriving now in Sochi, like there were some reporters from CNN, they had booked 11 rooms at a hotel, but only one room was ready. What are you supposed to do? And things like the water doesn't work if there is any water, and the hotel doesn't have a lobby. One of the signs, these are reporters that are tweeting these photos, the sign in the room said, don't drink the water or use it on your face because it has dangerous particles in it. And then she took a photo of the water and it was brown. So I'm just saying the hotel, I mean, you know, Putin promised all these hotel rooms, but they're not ready yet. And the workmen are working 24 hours a day to get it done. But meanwhile, I don't know what these reporters are doing.
All right, Renee, thanks for the call. And you can join in at 800-642-1234. Are you going to watch the Olympics? Why or why not? What are you looking forward to?
All right, thanks for that call. And let's go next to Anita in Gurnee, Illinois. Hi, Anita.
Hi. First of all, I will be watching the Olympics no matter where they held them. However, there's a huge question among so many people. I mean, every time I talk to somebody, everybody keeps shrugging their shoulders and going, why are we choosing Sochi for this? You know, first of all, it doesn't have a winter climate. It has a climate like that of Atlanta, Georgia. And this is not, I'm not kidding, this is true. And so that means they're transporting the Olympians that need snow to the mountains. And they said, and if there's not enough snowfall, they have a whole bunch of it stockpiled that they can truck in. Between that and the security, one wonders, what was the criteria? Who judged that Sochi was going to be the best spot for our Olympics this year?
So knowing what you know, all of the things that you just said, is it going to get in the way of you enjoying the Winter Olympics, do you think?
I think that the threats, that the terrorist threats that we've known about, that makes you a little tense. It's sort of like watching, you know, the Stanley Cup playoffs, and it's, you know, sudden death. Only in this case it really would be. So it does make you a little tense.
All right. Anita, thank you so much for calling and sharing your thoughts.
A line just opened up at 800-642-1234. Share your thoughts why you are or aren't watching the Olympics. 800-642-1234. We'll go to Catherine in Oshkosh next. Catherine, hi there.
Hi. I disagree with the previous caller. Excuse me. These young people are fellow Americans, and they have worked really hard for this. And they are taking the chance to be able to go there and risk everything to be able to compete. And I seriously believe that if everybody felt that same way, they would watch, regardless of the rhetoric. And I guess, you know, what's going on in Russia in terms of, like, the hotels and stuff, it's comical. But that should have no effect or any bearing on whether or not we watch these young people and support them.
So it's about the athletes for you, Catherine. What events are you particularly excited to see in the Winter Olympics?
I love the ice skating. So that, and I'm kind of fascinated with the snowboarding.
Uh-huh.
So, yeah, those are primarily what I will be watching.
All right, Catherine, thanks so much for your call. You can join in, just a couple minutes left. Your thoughts on the Olympics. What news are you watching? What has you worried? What has you excited? And the big question, are you going to watch the Olympics? Do you ever? 800-642-1234 is the number to call. 800-642-1234. Veronica, I know our own Cynthia Schuster is a huge figure skating fan. I imagine she'll be watching that this year. Is it an event that you tend to follow in the Winter Olympics?
I actually like the figure skating, too, and the ice dancing. I like snow, which is ironic, considering I don't like snow as much in Wisconsin, because I like it when it's on TV. But I mean, there's a lot. But it's a complex scenario we're in right now, and I think our callers are reflecting that, talking about some ambivalencies about watching it. Some saying, yeah, let's support the athletes. Some people are saying, you know, sure, I'm going to watch, but I'm not sure that this was the best call to make. So people are expressing mixed feelings about this year's Olympics. And let's take another caller now. We have Kim on the line from Hartford. Hi, Kim.
Hi there.
Hi. What do you think about this year's Olympics? Will you be watching?
Actually, no, I'm going to boycott it this year.
Okay. How come?
Actually, there was a mass killing of the stray dogs in that area. Just for the event.
Okay, so that's enough to keep you away. There's lots of other things, and if it weren't for that, would you be watching?
Oh, I still wouldn't watch. Not with the other things that are going on as well. I think it was a very poor choice.
Okay, well, thank you for calling and sharing your thoughts. Appreciate it.
We'll go now to Henry in Algoma. Henry, hi, you're on the air.
Hi. Yeah, I'm calling about the Olympics. I'm interested in the luge and bobsled, considering there's no snow and they got to ship everybody up there. I'm curious about that. And I'm also curious about, I'm afraid something's going to happen.
All right. And, Henry, thanks for sharing your thoughts. Luge is an exciting one to watch. Definitely the bobsled. It probably is fun to watch, but I think it would be pretty terrifying to do. I always wonder about that. Thanks for sharing that, Henry. I think we have time for one more caller if we get somebody queued up. Looking at Dino in Mount Horeb. Dino, hi, you're on the air.
Hi, everyone. Just want to say thanks for awesome programming again. I am looking forward to the magical spectacle that is the Winter Olympics. Going back to the first Olympics that I was old enough to understand and comprehend, and how excited I got staying up all night watching the NBC coverage from Sarajevo when it was then Yugoslavia. And I think it's a point to be made that we don't know what the future is going to hold for these various venues that host these games. And given the state of geopolitics on that side of the world, it's going to be interesting to see if the games have any impact in bringing together.
All right. Thanks a lot. We'll leave it there. Dino, thanks to you and for everyone for their calls and comments.